Blog Talk Radio.
We're a couple of misfits. We're a couple of misfits. What's the matter with misfits? That's where we fit in. We're not Gabby and Jilly. Don't go round willy-nilly. Seem to us kind of silly that we don't fit in. We may be different from the rest. Who decides the test of what is really best? We're a couple of misfits. We're a couple of misfits. What's the matter with misfits? That's where we get in.
More like Jabba the Hutt. Oh, good evening. Welcome. Yeah, I'm about that size after this holiday. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House. Merry Christmas. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by...
Merry Christmas. I'm Dan Bigley from Weird, This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're accompanied by...
I don't know that that was a Tom Lear song. Blah, blah. Is that Guys and Ghouls?
There you go. And we already got CW Fogsbane and good old Bob in the chat joining us here live on a holiday. Thank you oh so much. My Christmas is made.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's
I can hear you.
We can. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not all your Christmas wishes are granted. What are you talking about?
yeah, and... We got a good one for you tonight, Mutual Radio Theater. It's going to be narrated by Vincent Price, and Hans Conried stars in it. Yeah. From the Silver Age, right, Dave?
From the Silver Age, that's right. The good old Mutual Radio Theater, which followed the Sears Radio Theater. Same thing, except change switch networks. Start on CBS. CBS started, sold it off to Mutual, who had continued on for another little bit of time, about another year there, and all kinds of interesting things happened with the five night a week, five different hosts, type doing five of different types of stories. Monday night, Lauren Green with Westerns. Tuesday night, Andy Griffith with comedies. Wednesday night, Mystery with Vincent. On Thursday nights, it was Love and Hate Stories with Cicely Tyson. And then on Fridays, it was Richard Widmark with Adventure Stories, which when he got ill or passed, it passed on to Howard Duff for a short time to be finished up by Leonard Nimoy.
Ah, yes. That's right. Leonard, get on there and do some radio. Mm-hmm.
I accidentally talked this up, and Dave helped me out a lot on the show Saturday, because I was like, and I heard this thing. And then Dave's like, yeah, it's out. It's going to be on Eerie House. I was like, it is? It's like, yeah, Monday. Really? What time? Well, right here. Do you have a link? There you go. So,
surprise.
I know. In my jumbled mind, I brought it up, and I was like, this was an amazing story. You'll love it. I'm not going to give it all away, but, you know, this is a – so, we might get a little bit of traffic out of that. I don't know.
Yep. fun story, too. Very Christmassy. It's called The Last of Scrooge.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Well, before we start, I actually did some musical research and found an early Eerie House recording. And I thought I'd share that little research right now before we get started into the show.
Why not? Oh my God.
This song, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, is from the 1944 movie Meet Me in St. Louis, although it almost wasn't included. Judy Garland wouldn't record it because she believed the second verse was too morbid. Finally, the writer relented and changed the lyrics which is how it has been recorded throughout the ages. However, I do specialize in the morbid, so with some assistance from the zombie chorus, I would like to record the original second verse. Zombie chorus, are you in good voice? Very good. Then let us begin. Yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be your last. Next year we may be all living in the past. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Pop that champagne cork.
I never drink. Why?
Next year we may all be living in New York. No good times like the olden days. Happy golden days of your faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us no more. But at least we all will be together. If the Lord allows, from now on we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Why she wouldn't read those lyrics. I don't understand that.
I don't know.
Brains. Brains. Yes. Yep. Yep.
Ah, brains. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now that makes sense.
Yeah. What else would a zombie say?
I actually have a book about 'Twas the Night Before a Zombie Christmas, which is really kind of twisted, but I mean.
Couldn't have been much more twisted than that, but okay.
Yeah, sure. Should share that too. What the heck? Foist. Let's get on to our radio program. I want to find out what happens with the last of Scrooge. So, all right. So, like, the first story kind of ended happy. I wonder how this one's going to end.
Oh. Right.
Who knows? Originally broadcast
January, February, March, April
9th,
1980.
Yep.
This is Vincent Price.
Brains.
Scrooge was dead.
Brains.
Ebenezer Scrooge, a man feared, hated, finally loved, was dead. Oh, he didn't pass away, as you might have expected, surrounded by a mournful family of grateful Cratchits or his weeping nephew. As the parson commended Scrooge's soul heavenwards. Oh, no, dear friends. Scrooge was quite alone when he faced his maker. You see, he froze to death on a park bench in a deserted corner of Hyde Park as London's January wind swept over his tattered clothes and shoeless feet. Later, some whispered that he had been attacked by a gang or fallen prey to some evil night stalker. But this was simply not true. Scrooge froze to death, like a thousand other homeless men they found that bleak winter. Poor Ebenezer. His body lay unclaimed in a charnel house until the end of the week. Then he was placed in a meager wooden casket and lowered into a pauper's grave. It was an ignominious end to his life, a sad moment for a man who tried to atone for his mistakes. What had happened to this man of wealth to fall upon such pitiful times? Was not the mending of his ways enough to assure him a glimpse of happiness? And what of his nephew? Certainly he could have taken steps to prevent his uncle's circumstances. What of Tiny Tim and the Cratchit family? Where were they in his time of need? Had Scrooge, as some had whispered, gone insane, escaped from an institution, and lost himself in London's teeming streets? The matter of his death was certainly something to ponder. Wasn't his conversion to love and charity enough to ease the burden of his guilty conscience? Enough to allow others to accept him and care for him in his waning years? Apparently not, because he died alone. The harsh wind mixed with icy rain beating into his lifeless body. He died a man unwanted. Scrooge was dead, and not a soul was there to mourn him. And that's just the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, The Last of Scrooge, by Ken Jerrard. Our star, Hans Conried.
What had befallen Scrooge after his miraculous transformation from skinflint to as good a man as the good old city knew? Wasn't his very being filled with love and charity enough to erase the harm of his former image? Or was it his intense desire to be loved that destroyed him in the end? Or was it madness? Well, I'll let you resolve those questions at the final curtain of this drama. For now, let us pick up the threads of our story. The days after Christmas were filled with joy and laughter. Scrooge could not have been merrier. His office ablaze with warmth. His heart was fired with kindness. So much so that his clients winked at each other knowingly. Had old Scrooge gone round the bend? People could not accept this change in him. They still feared the old man because his reputation, carefully nurtured over the years, could not be altered in a single day, nor changed by his succeeding acts of compassion. Scrooge knew it, for he was no fool. He summoned his lawyer to his home. He devised a plan to prove to the world that he was truly a man to be loved.
Oh, Mr. Campton. Come in, sir, please.
Yeah. How are you, Ebenezer?
Oh, never better, thank you. Oh, come, Mr. Campton. We'll sit in the parlor and enjoy a roaring fire whilst we talk.
Well, you've repainted the entire house.
Oh, indeed. I couldn't look at those drab walls another day. Oh, I lived here in such depressing surroundings beyond me. Oh, yes, Mr. Campton, a new life is ahead of me. I relish the days. I want to live each moment to the fullest. I want others to enjoy it also. That's why I asked you here. Please sit there. No. Take a seat by the fire.
Well... I marvel at your change, Ebenezer. It was quite sudden, but nevertheless, welcome.
Well, if it hadn't been for the spirits, I never would have come to my senses.
Spirits?
Of course. First it was Marley's ghost, then the ghost of Christmas, but the last idiot apparition, a phantom in black, was the cruelest. How, Mr. Campton, he showed me the future, and it was horrible. I had died unwanted, alone. But the worst was the death of Tiny Tim. I could not bear that sight.
You had visions of your own death?
Of course. I saw the future and the past. It was then that I realized my entire life had meant nothing. Yeah. I'd thrown away everything I loved. I was consumed by suspicion and hate. I knew I had to change. No, I knew I had to give, Campton. Give love and receive it in return. And that's why I've asked you here.
Yes. These visions, did they ever speak to you before?
No.
Did you saw Jacob Marley's ghost?
Well, I spoke with him. Poor Jacob was in chains.
I see. And did you talk to other visions?
Well, naturally. And I flew with him. We passed through the walls and were transported to old Fezziwig's house.
You say you flew and walked through walls?
Several times.
Ebenezer, have you told others this tale?
No, I don't think so.
Good. Let's keep it our secret. The others might... some could get the wrong impression about the entire episode. I believe you understand, don't you?
No, my dear Mr. Captain. I'm not crazy. I'm cured. The visions, the ghosts, and Jacob's warning have given me a clearer picture than ever before. Oh, I'm quite sane.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to imply anything.
Oh, I know. It all seems so mad, so topsy-turvy, that I should turn over a new leaf and attempt to right my past mistakes. Call them dreams or visions, whatever you wish, it doesn't matter. The important fact remains that they changed my life for the better.
Yes, well, probably they were dreams. And often nightmares prod us to action where sweet reveries lull us into complacency. Now what are we about? A new will, a lawsuit, I'm at your disposal.
Oh, better than that, my dear Mr. Campton. I want to dispose of all my earthly goods before I die.
Well, that's simple. I can draw up a will in 2 days. Do you have a list of the bequests and the heirs?
No. I want to give everything away now, tomorrow.
You jest. I mean, are you planning to enter a monastery?
Oh, absolutely not. I thought you through to the last detail, to the last cup and saucer. I want people to enjoy my wealth while I'm still alive.
This is incredible. Ebenezer, you have to reconsider the idea. Now, where would you live? Who would care for you? Who would run the business?
No, patience, my dear friend. I have it entirely settled in my mind.
Oh, no, this is folly. It's madness.
Oh, hardly. It's love and kindness I'm offering to repay those who endured my wrath and cruelty. Mr. Campton, I must do this with your help. I must show those who snicker behind my back and call me fool that I am a loving fool.
But you mustn't pay any attention to idle chatter. They'd malign the angels if given half the chance.
Oh, but I have to clear my name. Scrooge. The very sound has become synonymous with an art of flint, with a grasping old man laced with hate and greed. Suppose your name rang the devil's bell in others' hearts. Oh, I pray that may never happen. My name is my cross, my burden. I must cleanse it of the very poison with which it infects the air. Each time a child points a finger in anger and utters Scrooge at his victim, my soul shrivels. I detest my name. I loathe it as much as I loathe what I've done to others. I want to burn the word from our vocabulary. I will not go down in history as a villain. Oh, help me, Campton. Please, help me right monstrous wrongs. Help me clear myself before I die. I want to be loved. I will buy my share of devotion, if it's necessary.
And Kempton did assist Scrooge, though rather unwillingly. The concept was simple. Scrooge intended to give away all his possessions, his house, his furniture, the silver, and even the second set of china dishes. All this was to go to the Cratchits. Additionally, he set aside money for each of their children. Kempton shook his head with disbelief, but Scrooge was insistent. He made Kempton draw the papers with such clarity and precision that there could be little doubt who was to receive what. Scrooge made certain that everybody had a fair and equitable share of the fortune. To his faithful nephew, Fred, Scrooge would sign over 75% interest in his counting house. The remainder would be given to Bob Cratchit. Dutifully, Kempton drafted the proper legal documents and placed them in front of his client for his signature.
I wish you'd reconsider this plan. Why, if it brings such joy to others and relieves me of my troubles? Money cannot bring you happiness, Kempton. How will I know that? My house is nothing without laughter resounding off its walls. A business cannot thrive unless it gives service. No, my mind is made up. I shan't be free until the Cratchits are in this house and Fred is in charge of my firm. Now, here must I sign the deed.
Yeah? Here, and once more on this document.
And that seals it. I feel free, unburdened. I have fulfilled my visions.
Looks like Scrooge, i.e. Hans, is having visions, all right.
Yep. Turned quite generous, did he? Those quite the spooky spirits there.
Yep. And then now he's going overboard the other way.
Yep.
Poor
Everything. Yeah. I made mention of this story on Saturday's Christmas for the horrible horror. And one thing I said was this. It is all wonderful and grand to offer help to people as long as it does not reduce yourself, because then you can't continue giving. And this guy went overboard, didn't he?
Yeah, so far it sounds like it. He's about to go give away everything he ever had.
I don't agree with his plan. I agree with it in part, but not all. There's something crazy going on.
There is crazy going on, yep.
Unhealthy. Yeah. Unhealthy.
There we go.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. I love Hans Conried. I can't get enough of that guy. And match that with Vincent Price, this thing is fantastic.
Yeah,
Hans Conried over the years, you know, most of the roles he had on a lot of radio was his comedic ones, but he had some drama chops in him and did a few movies, and he did some television, both comedy and seriousness. And he was, as far as I know, he is the only one that appeared both on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater and on the Sears/Mutual Radio Theater, not because they were that much competition in a way, but because the Radio Mystery Theater was on the East Coast in New York, and the Mutual Radio Theater was out of Hollywood. And so New York was constantly taking Broadway people, or if Hans Conried or someone like that was in town, he would use them. And Hollywood had all the Hollywood people there.
Aha. Why, those dirty
and
Hollywood
he was in demand,
people.
Apparently. Yeah. And he was in demand, apparently, as a fantastic voice actor.
Oh, yes. And did cartoon voice. I mean, this man was successful in radio, in the movies, in television, and cartoons. As far as I know, you know, I'm sure he did some Broadway as well.
And he was Evil Dr. Terwilliger.
He was Snidely Whiplash.
Yeah.
He was Evil Dr. Terwilliger, for sure.
Yeah.
5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
Yes.
Yep. He's everywhere. He's everywhere. I had a little trouble picking him out in this one at first. It took me a minute, and I'm like, oh, there he is.
Oh.
Yeah, he's Scrooge. He's Scrooge, yes.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He
it
is
took
Scrooge.
Me a minute to figure that out.
Yeah. Yep. Dave, wasn't he Snidely Whiplash in the Dudley Do-Right series?
He may have been. I know he was also the Hoppity Hooper's uncle, who was the wolf, I think, which was his
right.
uncle. So many of those cartoons, they just there wasn't a place the guy wasn't successful.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the Hoppity Hooper was the same cartoon production company, I believe, as Bullwinkle and Dudley Do-Right.
Could have been. Could have been. Very much so.
He was also the professor in The Twonky. Oh, really?
Yes. Oh,
weird
I ran
movie.
That movie.
Yeah,
I ran that movie a year or two ago. It's a funny movie. It's definitely a vehicle just for him.
Yeah.
Yep. And a story by Arch Obler. Actually, Arch Obler directed it, too, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, no wonder I like it.
Yeah. It's a very bizarre little. It could have been on The Outer Limits or Twilight Zone. It was an interesting film.
Yep. A neat concept.
But we digress. Yeah.
We do digress as we continue on with our tale from Mutual Radio Theater, The Last Scrooge.
With a scratch of a pen, Scrooge had signed over all his assets to the Cratchits and his nephew. He had reversed the entire course of a lifetime within 3 weeks. Scrooge leaned back in the dark leather chair, satisfied that he had unburdened his soul and brought happiness to everyone. Lawyer Kempton looked at the documents and shook his head. It seemed foolhardy to give away the house, the business. Certainly Scrooge was acting rashly, or was it irrationally? Kempton wondered if he should mention any of the visions or discussions with Marley to Ebenezer's nephew. No, surely not. Perhaps Scrooge was jesting. Of course, it was a joke, a play upon words. Kempton handed the papers back to Scrooge.
Well, it's done, Ebenezer. You have given everything away. I've never felt more at peace with myself than at this moment, Mr. Kempton. I'm free. It's as if a millstone had been lifted off my entire being. Don't you realize how happy, truly happy I am?
I'm trying to understand, Ebenezer.
Oh, good. Please, go to the Cratchit's house, to my nephew's home. Bring all of them here. I want to see the joy on their faces when I tell them the news.
In several hours, the Cratchits, the nephew Fred and his wife Anne, and Mr. Kempton were assembled before the fire in Scrooge's parlor. It was a moment that Ebenezer hoped he would savor for the balance of his life. However, in reality, it was a bitter turning point, which would ultimately lead to his death.
No. Sit here, Mrs. Cratchit.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Scrooge.
Are you comfortable, Anne? Why don't you take my chair?
I'm fine, dear uncle. Perhaps Mrs. Cratchit would care for my place.
I'm quite satisfied, thank you, ma'am.
But you look so uncomfortable.
I'm used to straight chairs. The plainest of furniture fulfills my needs.
It certainly does, my dear.
And, gentlemen, are your glasses amply filled with sherry?
Absolutely, Uncle Ebenezer.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, Bob, you must learn to call me Ebenezer. It's all different now, all changed, and for the better.
I propose a toast to Mr. Ebenezer. Long may he live.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your fellowship and warm sentiments. It must seem strange that in such a brief span I've moved from one extreme to the other.
Oh, Uncle, you don't have to explain any of your actions. Fred and I rejoice that you have found peace within yourself.
Oh, I will treasure those feelings for the balance of my days, because I know
Or rather, I was shown that often you had little patience with me.
That's not so. Dearest uncle, I never bore you any ill will.
Well, if you did, it was well deserved, as I treated your husband with contempt and made him feel ridiculous. Oh,
all in the past. There's no need to thrash old feelings about. This is the beginning of a new year and a new life for you, uncle.
Well put, my boy. I wish to wipe the slate clean.
I wish to propose another toast to Mr. Scrooge.
Put it down, Bob. Hmm? Put the glass down. Put it down.
Oh, Bob, it makes my heart light to see you so merry.
He does nothing but sing your praises to the children when we're at home. Belinda constantly remembers you in her prayers each night before bed. Oh, it's so pleasant to hear her say, God bless us all, and especially dear Mr. Scrooge.
It brings tears to my eyes that she's included me in your family.
I know she'll never forget what happiness you brought to all of us. And how many children do you have, my dear?
None at present. We felt we should abstain from raising a proper family until we had sufficient means. I understand one of your sons is lame. What a pity, my dear. So sorry.
Anne, please.
You expect me to hold my tongue when that cheap fishwife, that cow, plays your uncle like a cello with her children's prayers and adoring smile. She makes me...
We'll discuss it afterwards.
I've asked you here to unfold some of my plans. I've decided to make reparations to all of you whilst I'm still alive and can share your happiness.
I don't understand.
Well, I'm giving my fortune away now.
What?
Mr. Campton, would you please read the document?
Yes, of course, Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge, being of sound mind, do hereby instruct my attorneys to prepare the documents. One, my home and chattels therein, be given to Robert Cratchit.
You're giving us this house?
And all the furniture, the dishes, the towels, even the mousetrap. It's a small compensation for the disservice I've done to your family.
The old man's a raving lunatic.
And to each of the Cratchit children, I put in trust the sum of £5,000 to be divided among them when they reach legal maturity.
God bless you, sir.
In addition, I place in trust with Kempton and Kempton Esquires the sum of £2,000 which shall be disbursed for medical treatment as needed by Master Timothy Cratchit.
You have our Tim's undying love.
And fourthly, I give to my faithful friend, Robert Cratchit, the sum of £3,000.
Oh, I can't believe this.
You're just too kind, Mr. Scrooge. Too kind.
Yes, well, I've instructed the bank to issue you a draft for the entire sum in the morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
An ass in feathers is still an ass.
To my dearest nephew, Frederick, I give the sum of £3,000.
Most gracious of you, Uncle.
Oh, wait, there's more. Read on, Mr. Kempton, read on.
And sixthly, I assign a 75% interest in my business to my nephew, Fred.
What?
And the remaining 25% to my devoted clerk, Robert Cratchit. Thus ends the gifts and trust.
Ain't it wonderful? Fred and Bob, partners. I cannot tell you how overjoyed this has made me. We can only thank the specters for this wonderful moment.
Scrooge's revelation stunned Mrs. Cratchit and his niece, Anne. Both women smiled politely, but inwardly seized with anger and jealousy. Lawyer Kempton watched their show of happiness, realizing that beneath the charming veneer, they hated each other.
Mr. Kempton, did you hear what Mrs. Cratchit said?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, Ebenezer. I was rereading the deed to your house.
We want Mr. Scrooge to live with us. Well, it wouldn't seem right to have him give up his comforts, even though we'll be there. Isn't that right, Bob?
Oh, for certain. The children would love to be with you. Tiny Tim already thinks of you as his grandfather.
You hear that, Mr. Campton? I'm a grandfather.
Yes,
you're very lucky, Ebenezer. Very lucky.
Oh, it'll be wonderful. Mr. Scrooge sitting by the fire reading to the children and helping Bob to learn the business and spoiling Belinda with treats. We'd be a real family, a very happy family.
Oh, you see, Mr. Campton, you say it's a dream come true.
I hope so. I sincerely do.
Mr. Campton, don't be so worried. Of course the Cratchits will take good care of Uncle Ebenezer. Isn't that right, Mrs. Cratchit?
Well, yes, of course. We'll always have a place for him.
See, it's settled. I'm delighted. But, never mind.
Now, Anne, speak out. I sense something's bothering you.
It's not my place, Uncle.
No, I insist. What is it?
I was thinking how the Cratchits needed time, especially those darling children, to acclimate themselves to their new home. I guess it's foolish, but I would want to have matters settled, settled, before I could graciously receive any visitors or relatives.
Oh, I understand. You're quite right. I'm selfish. The Cratchits should be alone when they take possession of the house.
Oh, not at all. We want you to stay. Tell him, Bob.
Perhaps Miss Anne has a point. Not that we don't want you, Mr. Scrooge, but the hubbub of the children might be disturbing to you.
The children aren't any trouble. And this still is Mr. Scrooge's residence.
Oh, now, dear lady, as of this day, this is your home.
Why don't you stay with us while the Cratchits acquaint themselves with newer surroundings?
Oh, yes, I insist, Uncle. There's more than enough room. The change would do you wonders, and we can discuss the details of your business at leisure. You see, I want to take advantage of your years of knowledge in order to make Scrooge and Marley thrive.
Oh, there's great sense of this. Indeed, I'll pack this afternoon and I'll come round for dinner.
Oh, I'm so disappointed. Won't you reconsider, Mr. Campton? Beg him to stay. I feel as if I'd forced you out of the house.
Odious woman. Harpy.
I've won, you snivelling witch. You might own the house, but I'll have him.
I wish I could tear those blonde curls out of her head. I'll have you back, you old man, before she's poisoned your mind.
True to his word, Scrooge moved in with his nephew, while the Cratchits took possession of the home. Daily, Scrooge would accompany Fred to the counting house, where they would pore over loans and interest rates and collections. Bob Cratchit often listened to their discussions, but inevitably returned to his desk to add columns of figures. Ebenezer was pleased that his nephew had such a grasp of the business and expressed his pleasure to Anne that evening at dinner.
Oh, Anne, I marvel at your husband's ability. He's learned my business within days.
You're too kind. I'm sure there's much more for him to know. What took you years of wisdom and experience to understand can't be understood in such a short time. You flatter him, Uncle Ebenezer.
Oh, indeed not. I thank the spirits that I had the good sense to turn everything over to Fred.
Not everything, but we're more than satisfied. Your company is payment enough.
A toast to Uncle Ebenezer and the spirit of Christmas.
Oh, spirits, Fred, spirits.
I hope they haven't bothered you since you've been here.
Oh, not at all. I only talked to Jacob at night.
You've seen Jacob Marley?
Oh, yes. Every night, as I lie in bed and wait for him to materialize. And then we talk for hours. I've told him how happy I am, how Fred's progressing. What's happened to the Cratchits? Oh, Jacob is pleased, very pleased.
They're dreams, Uncle, like the other time.
Well, dreams, if you wish, but Marley does with it with me.
Have you ever discussed these apparitions with Mr. Kempton?
Oh, certainly. He knows all about them. There's nothing I would hide from my attorney.
Most sensible, Uncle, and most important. Did he feel the spirits had guided you unwisely in the past weeks?
Well, you know, Mr. Campton, he's a man of logic, of fact. His mind, it works like a clock. He thought my voices were a fever that had swayed my judgment. Poor man, he has little imagination and too much reason.
Did he question your actions? Did he feel giving your home to the Cratchits a sound decision?
Well, it wasn't his decision or mine. It was the will of the spirits. I've told you that before.
Anne and Fred sat facing each other in the parlor after Scrooge had gone to bed. Despite their silence, they thought along similar lines. Finally, Anne spoke.
I'm glad he's insane.
Oh, you mustn't say that.
No? You want him living here the rest of his life? You want to hear his wheezing and hacking in the dead of night? Or do you want to remain partners with a simpleton, a petty, low-class fool whose main ambition is to add rows of numbers? You want that, dear? I'm the laughing stock of our circle because my husband shares a business with Clark.
He's harmless.
He's there. I want him judged incompetent. I want the lawyers to pore over all the legal documents he's prepared and find them the work of a deranged old man, a madman. I want her out of that house. I want her groveling in the streets and her children picking rags.
Stop, stop. Your cruelty goes beyond reason. They're harmless people who have never had anything. Let them live. Be content, Anne. Be satisfied.
Oh, my darling, I only want you to receive your rightful share. Of course, the Cratchits are entitled to something, but what? He has given them much more than they deserve. Am I wrong? Can you honestly tell me that the house is rightfully theirs, or that you cherish the idea of sharing your efforts with Bob Cratchit?
What should we do?
Have Scrooge declared unfit. Throw the issue of property into the courts. Let them find for us. It's out of our hands. Once he's examined, they'll know he's mad. Let the spirits help him then. We've waited too long to let this opportunity elude us. We'll have Kempton act in our behalf. Yes, let him institute the proceedings. Scrooge is mad. I want him locked in the darkest corner of the asylum. Let him tell the rats and the spiders about Marley and the visions.
What's that? Who's there? Uncle Scrooge. We didn't hear you come downstairs.
Apparently not.
But he's heard everything, haven't you, old man?
Yes, you scheming viper.
Good. I'm glad. I hate you. And when we're finished, you'll be remembered for your insanity, not your meanness.
That's the end of part two of The Last of Scrooge. This is not going well for the old geezer.
Yep, true colors are beginning to show.
Yep. Why? Darn that Bob Cratchit.
How could they do that to Hans Conried? I don't know.
Yeah, of all people.
And she's not even related by blood, and she's after blood. Crazy.
Yep. Well, people get like that sometimes. They see something sparkly, and they got to have it. Regardless of the outcome, they're going to do what they're going to do.
Now, I'm really getting down on this story now. Hey, Dale, maybe you might have Gar unwrap one of the stocking stuffers. I'll feel
sure.
Better.
Yeah, why don't you? Reach your hand into that filthy sock and pull something out, will you?
Oh, God, there's a mousetrap in there. Oh, God, what the heck, man? Go ahead. Who did that?
Okay.
I was going for a Christmas orange, and out I pull a mousetrap.
I don't know.
Let's try again.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used the treetops. Listen, and children, listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. May your days be merry and bright. And may all your Christmases be
merry. Wait, there's more.
I'll be home for Christmas.
Oh, that's cool.
You
never knew you were.
Please have snow.
You know, after.
And mistletoe. And presents on the tree.
The tree, isn't it,
Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams.
I'll look up, second.
I'll be home for Christmas. If only
I'll
be home for Christmas.
What are you doing here?
Christmas cheer from the Bangster. From one of those old V-discs, huh, Dave?
Yeah, one of those little V-discs. It's kiss, kiss. Yeah.
Some World War II classic stuff. We're going to have time for more stocking stuffers later, too.
Yeah.
As we... Are you enjoying this one so far, Gar?
So far, it's so good. Hans Conrad, you can't get enough of that guy.
Of course, the great Vincent Price is hosting the overall story.
Yep.
We haven't heard too much from him, but I'm sure he'll be back before it's all over tonight. And let's go ahead then and wrap up Mutual Radio Theater, The Last of Scrooge.
Oh, sad.
Scrooge ran from the house in the dead of night. Tears streamed down his cheeks as Anne's words echoed in his brain.
help me. Oh, dear God, turn this horror from a reality into a simple nightmare. Let me wake in my bed. Please, please let this be a tortured dream as penance for my sins. Cold. I'm cold inside and out. Where to, Scrooge? Oh, he's not yet lost. I'll go home. To my fire. Yes, yes, to my house. What's done can be undone. I'll be myself again. Open! Open!
Upon my soul, Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, damn your soul, close the door.
Yes, sir. You're soaked to the skin. Come, sit by the fire.
Move aside, you fool.
Who is it, Bob? Ebenezer! Well, you're sopping. Bob, get his robe and some blankets. Well, quickly, man. Oh, give me your coat.
I'll take it. Turn the chair. Face of the fire, you farce.
Yes, sir.
Fetch my comforter. Get out. I said get out. Didn't you hear me, you fat-faced little gutter snob? Get out.
Are you ill, sir?
Ill? No. I'm cured. And I see you for what you are. You get out now.
Oh, well, so this is your niece's handiwork. Well, she's done a proper job. And in such a short time with that pompous witch.
Oh, you're all witches, lying, ungrateful trollops.
Shut your mouth, you old man.
How dare you? Get out of my house. Take your pack of disgusting children, your feeble-minded husband, and get out.
You sit down. Sit down and be still.
Oh, I'll have the bailiffs throw you out into the deepest part of the prison and make sure that your brats never leave the workhouse.
If you speak once more, just once, I'll bend this poke across your wretched head. You see?
Now.
I loathe you, Scrooge. I've hated you for years. Even this Christmas dinner of ours stuck in my throat when Bob raised his glass to you. Founder of the feast, indeed. Why, you're an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man. Your name casts an evil shadow on this ass. My ass, you old fool. Well, it belongs to me now.
Well, not for long. You'll be out of here tomorrow. Kempton will see to that.
Oh, hardly, dearie. Didn't you sign the deed over to us? Didn't you give freely and without stipulation the money to the children and a share of the business to Bob? You did all that. It's signed and ours. All ours.
Oh, not quite. You see, my dear, I'm going to contest the transaction. I'm going to have the whole matter reversed. I'll bring my case on temporary insanity brought on by food poisoning. And then everything will be thrown into a conservator's hands, Mr. Kempton's hands, and you and these miserable brats will be forced from my home. Scrooge will be Scrooge once more.
Oh, so you dead before one of my children sleeps among the lice and roaches again? You're burning hell as you deserve. Insane. You're just mad. But to my advantage. Look at you. Dressed in sopping clothes. Well, you're just nothing but a raving lunatic. What's signed and sealed will never be undone by the likes of you. Your darling niece has played the hand for both of us. Now get out, Scrooge. Get out of my ass. Let the wind and rain freeze your wretched heart.
Contemptible slut. No. Put that poker down. Don't come near me now.
Get out, you filthy.
Don't you dare touch me.
Out. Run, old man. Run to your death.
Scrooge ran through the night as the wind and the rain pelted his face and soaked his clothes. The rain turned to sleet and the wind howled around the corners of London's deserted streets. Scrooge's eyes glistened like a man possessed. He scurried from building to building like a hunted animal. Finally, exhausted and shivering, he pounded on Mr. Kempton's door.
Oh, my God. Ebenezer, come in, man. Come in. Take off those shoes.
Yeah.
Give me your coat. Here. Mm-hmm. And put this blanket around yourself. What happened?
Oh, Mr. Kempton, I've seen more evil, more hate than I ever thought existed in the entire world. The devils have turned on me. Kempton, it's all gone wrong. Everything has turned upside down. I'm a fool. A stupid fool whose mind is twisted with love and hate.
Did Fred cause this?
Yeah. Fred? Bob, hardly. Poor simple man, dancers with bibs controlled by scheming women.
Come to pass too quickly, too soon.
You knew this would happen, didn't you?
Yes.
Why did you stop me?
Would you have listened?
No. No, I wouldn't. The idea was too set in my mind. My emotions would have rejected the best of reason.
Well, now, enough sadness for one night. You'll take the spare bedroom and we'll talk in the morning.
Kempton, am I insane?
Well, this is... It's not the time to discuss these questions.
Am I, Kempton? Am I?
I think your heart has been filled with anger for years, and it forced you to act unreasonably. Your hatred of mankind certainly stems from the irrational, as do your actions of hate. I've always known you for a man possessed with unspeakable pain and with a galaxy of fears.
That's true. It's quite true. I didn't want to become what I've become. My life was, and still is, a living hell.
Oh, no, hush. Now, let's leave this until the morning.
Captain, I've never been loved.
Now, please, Ebenezer.
It's a fact. How can anyone give love when they've never received it? I was always the outcast. My father detested the sight of me. I never knew why. What had I done except being born? Captain, I've been so alone. So lonely. I only wanted to spend the last years being loved. Being loved. Was it too much to ask?
Kempton guided Scrooge up the stairs and into the spare bedroom. He closed the door, leaving the old man to prepare himself for bed. Poor Ebenezer, he thought. Poor demented man. A whole life wasted. Kempton trudged sadly to his chambers and fell into a fitful sleep. However, Scrooge was awake. His eyes darted across the room, searching the shadows and peering into the blackness. Suddenly, he cocked his head.
Who's there? Marley? Spirit? Is that you, Jacob? Speak to me. Who is in this room? I can't see you. No more. Haven't I paid enough for my sins? Aren't you satisfied? I can't take no more suffering. My whole life has been a punishment before. What more do you want of me? Father? Father, is that really you? What? What? Follow? You want me to follow you? Oh, gladly. Gladly. You sorry? Oh, I forgive you. You want to be with me? With me alone? Oh, yes. Yeah, yes, I'll come. I'll come gladly. I've waited such a long time for you, Father. It's been so lonely without you.
They found him the next morning. He was frozen to death on a bench in Hyde Park. He was just another faceless old man who was buried in a pauper's grave on that bleak winter. Kempton never suspected he had died, and the others didn't care.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you five nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, The Last of Scrooge, was written by Ken Jerrard and produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Your host was Vincent Price. Our star was Hans Conried. Featured in the cast were Ben Wright, Len Berman, Betty Harford, Valerie Cooney, and Ivor Barry. The music for radio theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. John Harlan speaking. The Elliot Lewis production of Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
Shirley Tyson. Join us tomorrow when I'll have another story that illustrates one of love's many faces.
Ooh. Thank you, Vincent Price, for sharing this story with us.
Indeed.
Yep. Scrolling. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
A leopard can't change its spots, but you can connect the dots.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Or in other words.
Oh, wait, do it again.
Oh, okay, hang on, here it comes.
Oh, yeah, brains.
Brains.
Stuff, I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas. I know I did. Celebrating with the fam, the whole fam family.
Yeah, I get to get together with my family on Saturday. My brother and sister-in-law from out of state, and I get to see both my sons, their spouses, and all my grandchildren on this upcoming Saturday.
Whoa! That'll keep you busy. A little bit of spy music here, huh?
Spies for Christmas. Yeah, there we go.
Well, yep. Always spying on everybody to see if they're good little boys and good little girls.
Well, I have been alive, more or less. But good or bad, that's up to y'all to figure out. Blog Talk's been kind of naughty this year.
They have been naughty this year. I'm still recording because that warning's still in the control room, so I've been recording this just in case. You never know.
Dave, don't trust them. And I don't blame you.
Yeah. But you know who I do trust? Fogs Bane and good old Bob to be here as often as they can be. And we've got who is that? That's Joseph Gibson. Okay.
Hi, Joe Gibson.
Tonight, so thank you so much for being here. And
yeah,
as always, CW and Bane and of course, my good friends, Gar the Ghoul and Dale K.
Yeah.
For your special present, I gave you, Dale, a next 2 month schedule. How's that?
That's a beautiful thing. I see it. I have already downloaded it. Wasn't Joseph Gibson a pitcher for the Cardinals, like, in the 60s? No, that was Bob Gibson.
That was Bob Gibson.
Ooh,
Bob Gibson.
That guy. Ooh, oof. Man, you didn't want to get him mad at you.
No. And that's a guy that could bat, too, you know.
He'd get you right off the plate.
Yep.
Yeah, he could hit the ball, too, a little bit.
Yeah, he could.
Which I only recently found out is over now, even the National League, making the pitchers bad. It's terrible.
Yep. Well, we were playing two different games every day, so it only made sense that you played one game or the other, and unfortunately, the designated hitter won out.
I'll be home for Christmas, passed out on the floor. Aqua Teen Hunger Force, they got it, good old Bob.
But yeah, we got some more stocking stuffers there to unveil and things like that. So,
yeah, as soon as this music bed runs out, we can do another. We can do another stocking stuffer.
No mouse traps.
No mouse traps.
Oh, take away all the fun. Take away all the fun.
Yeah, there's one of the growing up. Now, it's probably not so much prevalent these days, but back in the 50s or the 60s, if you got inside your stocking that Santa filled up, if you got an orange, it was or any type of citrus, it was unusual because it was out of season in most northern states or locales.
True.
You couldn't
fruit was
get
a big
it.
Deal. Fruit was a big deal.
Fruit was a big deal. Not so much anymore, but at a point in time it was.
Then they discovered something called trucks. Yeah.
Trucks.
Yeah.
Trucks.
Truck go fast.
Truck.
Truck. Truck. Truck.
Truck.
Truck go fast.
Trucks. I remember a Tonka toy made an indestructible truck that they're probably still around today.
Oh, yeah, but that sheet metal will tear off a couple layers of skin, let me tell you.
You could stop a criminal with a Tonka truck.
Yeah, I had the dump truck, too. Those things were big and heavy.
I had the Tonka VW Bug.
Ooh, those are cool.
I didn't
those
know
are cool.
made one.
Yeah.
You
should have saved it.
I don't know why this happened, but there was a toy company called Mego, and they made superhero toys. And they made a crime lab and a Joker mobile that were actually a ripoff of a VW microbus. And it's like, why would Batman be driving around in a VW microbus? But that was a toy back in the day.
It was Batman. It'll sell. It doesn't matter if it makes sense or not. It's
Yeah. You put the bat sticker on it, and you could put it on a manual can opener, and it would sell. Batman. Oh, look.
Yep.
Unfortunately, and they would promote it bad too. They would put out an inexpensive dart gun and put a Batman sticker on it, and be like, wait. Of all the things you can do with the Batman, guns are not part of it. Guns made Batman.
Yeah, Batman never used a gun or any kind of conventional weapon.
When he, in 1938-39, when he first started, he had a gun for 1 year and then took it away. As they later invented his origin story, like, oh, no. And so they were taboo.
Yeah.
After that. But, yeah, that was so weird because in the 70s and the 80s, you would see dart guns, and you're like, what? No, he uses a batarang for a reason.
Yeah.
To reload it.
And they're more fun. And they're more fun.
And they're more fun. And they come back.
They're fun like opening up a Christmas stocking.
Yes. Your turn, Dave.
My turn. Okay, let me reach in here and... I'm going to grab this one. I see.
Yeah.
I open it up. Let's see what's here. Yeah, let's see what's here.
Calling all detectives.
Here I am.
A Christmas? What's the matter with you?
Stolen bonds, a diamond ring, and a pack of cigarettes. Those are the exhibits on this page from my casebook. The casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. A private detective like me, Jerry Browning, knows that some people have a natural gift for trouble. It was 9 in the morning, and I was feeling real noble. This year, I'd do my Christmas shopping early. was a fine idea, except that I was a little too early, because the sign on the door of Julian's department store said that store hours began at 9:30. So I bought a newspaper. The big headline was about a robbery at a brokerage firm on Carteret Avenue. $20,000 in bonds stolen. The thieves had pried open a small ventilator, managed to send one of their number squirming through it, who then unlocked the door from the inside. Well, at least one gang in town had solved the problem of where to get shopping money. Along about then, Julian's opened for business, and I started my Christmas shopping. A fine pipe for Lieutenant Dawson, a travel kit for Wilbur Norris, a classy desk set for John Cooley, and for my pal Louie, the loudest sports shirt I could find. It took a while to find the right sports shirt, and it was almost 11 o'clock when I headed for the toy department. It was quite a deal. There were signs all over the place. This way to Santa's castle. Adults admitted only if accompanied by a child. That's when I saw Bill Carlin, the store detective. He was closing the heavily draped entrance to the castle. I pushed my way through to him. Hey, what's up, Bill? Are you telling these kids there ain't no Santa Claus? Bill glared at me, yanked me over to him.
Don't talk so loud, Jerry, because there certainly ain't no Santa Claus. Somebody just murdered him.
While I was Christmas shopping, I learned that the Santa Claus at a big department store had been murdered. Bill Carlin, the store detective, led me to a small room off the toy department.
By a tap dancer?
Santa Claus was there, all right, with a small bullet hole in his chest. Who did it, Bill?
How should I know? They just hire me to keep people from stealing the escalators.
But you must have heard the shot, Bill. The store detective rolled his eyes.
Shot? I hear a million shots all day. Machine guns, cannons, pistols, all toys.
Okay, so you didn't hear the shot. What's this poor guy's name?
How should I know? Come on, we'll check him at the personnel office.
More tap dancing.
The personnel manager found Santa's employment card.
His name is Ralph Clayton, age 54, married, 2 children, social security number 3190276, address 438 Mulberry Street, telephone Bryant 9435.
Jerry, you break the news to his family while I get the cops in here as quietly as possible.
A man answered the phone. I'd like to talk to Mrs. Clayton, please. She's out? Well, who am I talking to? Mr. Clayton? Mr. Ralph Clayton? Well, this is Jerry Browning, a private detective. Stay right where you are, Mr. Clayton. I'm coming to see you. At the Mulberry Street address, I talked to a very much alive Ralph Clayton.
My wallet was stolen about a week ago, Mr. Browning. Had my Social Security card in it. You say a man has been impersonating me, a Santa Claus? Dear me, how quaint.
Not so quaint, Mr. Clayton. He's dead. Julian's store was swarming with cops when I got back. The whole toy department was roped off and empty of customers. I spotted Lieutenant Dawson talking with Bill Carlin, the store detective, went over to them.
Hello, Jerry. We've identified Santa Claus from his fingerprints. He's Pete Groton with a record in 4 states.
That's nice work, Dawson. And did you also find out why Groton stole a Social Security card and impersonated his victim? Dawson frowned.
Well, not yet. But we'll get to it.
Okay. And you might also figure out how the killer got some kid to stooge for him. That one really stopped Dawson.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jerry.
I pointed to all the signs around. Santa's castle, adults admitted only if accompanied by a child. A killer couldn't get at Santa unless he had a kid with him. Your men have chased all the kids away, which includes the one possible witness to the murder. Dawson wagged his head mournfully, and Bill sighed with sympathy for him.
This is one of the times I'm glad I only have to worry about shoplifting.
I turned to Bill as Dawson hurried off. Bill, did you grab any shoplifters this morning?
Huh? Oh, sure. 5 of them this morning. This is a busy season. A woman trying to walk out with a dress, 2 guys shoving neckties in their pockets, another one who tried to wear a store overcoat out.
What'd you do with them?
Unless they're pros, I stop them inside the store and they pay for the stuff.
Uh-huh. Hey, wait a second. You said you nabbed 5 shoplifters this morning, but you only mentioned 4. Oh, I must have made a mistake. I guess there was only 4 of them. I stared at him, watched his face turn red. You're holding out on me, Bill. Must the new sentimental slob? Was the 5th one a kid? Well, yeah. But he didn't exactly shoplift. I grabbed him before he got the ring into his pocket. Oh, little bit of a guy. And he was trying to swipe this ring for his mother on account of he had no father and on account of he knew a chump when he saw one. A bell was ringing in my mind. I took the newspaper out of my pocket, showed Bill the headline. The brokerage company robbery. Entry made through a small ventilator. Bill, who can wriggle through a small ventilator?
You mean a kid?
Yeah, a kid. Or a midget. Bill, what's the best disguise at this time of year? Don't answer, I'll tell you. It's a Santa Claus costume. The streets are full of them. Pete Groton took this Santa job here. Could go all over town in costume without being recognized.
Well, okay, maybe, but what has that got to do with midgets and kids that try to snaffle rings in my store?
Because Groton must have been working with a midget. He wouldn't dare trust a kid. He probably arranged for his accomplice to come up here for his cut on the job, and while the midget was roaming around, he thought he'd pick up a little stray loot. Except that you nabbed him.
Yeah, and I let him go.
But you did see him. Come on, let's get Dawson. We found Dawson, told him my theory about a midget.
That could be Shorty Malone. I sent out a general alarm for him.
They picked up Shorty Malone that same evening as he was trying to board a train. He was dressed in a kid's sailor suit, but made the mistake of having a pack of cigarettes bulging his jumper pocket.
That's a kid I picked up in the store this morning. I'll never believe another sob story again.
And that wrapped it up. Shorty was the murderer, of course. Groton tried to hold out his share of the loot on the bond robbery job and paid for the mistake with his life. As for Shorty, he might have gotten away with it if he hadn't made the mistake of trying to steal a ring. Like I said, if you have a gift for trouble, you may do fine for the present. But there's no future in it.
Very good, very good. That was our first...
Well, not only that, that one guy did all the different voices in that.
Pretty good.
Yep. Not bad. Not bad.
Impressive.
Yeah. And we probably got Let's do another
one.
Your
time to pull the stocking, Dale. Yeah.
Oh, God. I have to get my fingers all stinky in here. Maybe not.
The skunk always smells his own socks first, you know?
Yep. Here we go.
For her first number tonight, Dinah Shore, in person, sings Merry American Christmas.
A merry American Christmas, that's what we're wishing you. My, but it's just great we can celebrate underneath the sky of blue. A merry American Christmas, how happy we should be. As the church bells chime that it's Christmas time in the land of liberty. From every single window, you'll see a Christmas tree, and hearts of old and young alike are joined in revelry. A merry American Christmas, the holiday's begun. This is the time for peace on earth and goodwill to end.
That was swell, Dinah.
Harry Como.
You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. he sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so
don't
be
good for goodness sake.
So you better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Watch out, better not cry, don't pout, I'm telling you why.
Oh, Santa Claus is coming to town.
He's making a list, checking it twice, he'll know who's been naughty or nice.
Yes, Santa Claus is coming to town. Now he sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Little Jack Frost, get lost, get lost. Little Jack Frost, get lost. You don't do a thing but put the bite on my toes. Freeze up the ground and take the bloom from the rose. So, Little Jack Frost, go away, go away. And don't you come back another day. There's lots of cold feet, all the lovers complain. You turned off the heat down in Lover's Lane. The bench in the park is all alone in the dark. So Little Jack Frost, get lost. Get lost, get lost. Little Jack Frost, get lost. You don't do a thing but put the bite on my toes. First thing you know, I've got a cold in my nose. So, Little Jack Frost, go away, go away. And don't you come back another day. There's lots of cold feet, all the lovers complain. You turned off the heat down in Lover's Lane. The bench in the park is all alone in the dark. So let that frost get lost, get lost. Little Jack Frost, get lost.
Jackson, why don't you take a tip from Bert Pearl and go powder your face with sunshine?
Well. A little Christmas winter collage of tunes. We'll be back next week.
Friday.
Friday,
four
yes.
4 days from now.
Yeah,
four
really. It's not
now.
Four miserable little days. New Year is upon us. We got some Philip Marlowe, Life of Riley, and Sherlock Holmes. Holmes! And then on Saturday, we're going to be doing CBS Radio Mystery Theater on our New Year's Eve show. That'll be Saturday night. The Leopard Man.
The Leopard Man.
We'll find out how that kind of
the Leopard
is.
Man.
The bird is a plane, it's the Leopard Man.
Does it have anything to do with the film of the same name, which I think was a Val Lewton movie, if memory serves? I do not know.
I remember there was a Noel Neal film called The Panther Girl. It was so bad.
Well, what's wrong with the Panther Girl?
It was a cliffhanger serial. Really awful.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a scene in there where I had shown this cliffhanger serial a few times. There's a scene in there where they're in a rowboat or some type of a, I think it was a rowboat, and they were trying to make their escape from what? Another rowboat. And the people in the back rowboat were shooting at them, and they kept missing. But Panther Girl was in the back of the boat, and I said she must have a bulletproof butt, and everybody just fell out because, you know.
What could be funnier than a bulletproof butt? I mean, really.
I know, yeah. Panther Girl, man. That was her secret weapon. We didn't know.
You know, I could have changed the whole course of the X-Files had that happened, you know.
With a bulletproof butt, yes.
If Scully would have had a bulletproof butt, yeah.
Yeah, that would have made all the difference in the world. That would have made all the difference in the world, yeah.
Man, that gal, Jillian Anderson, was that her name?
Yeah.
Wow, what a looker.
She was a cutie. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know.
She kept sci-fi alive.
Yeah, what I didn't know is that she's actually a girl from England. She did most of her work in England. She came over here to do that, and they kept wanting to prod her to do some more. She said she didn't rule it out, but we'll see.
In real interviews, did she have that Cockney accent?
She did. I mean, she played, Queen Elizabeth in something, and she did all kinds of things.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had no idea, but yeah, she's from across the pond there, and very, very much flattened out her English to play Scully. That's for sure.
Yes. I think about the voice training it takes to do that, and stay in
stay in that character. Not dialogue, don't lose it. Yeah. I know there was a program where it was a Scottish guy, and I couldn't understand a word he said in an interview, but he played a guy from San Francisco who kept going through this time travel thing until he fixed something with the same person. Mm-hmm. So, but when I heard him on an interview, the guy was so Scottish, couldn't hardly understand what he said.
That's funny.
You know? Scottish is the only English I need subtitles for. Maybe Welsh too, but you know.
Yes. You guys played Round the Horn the other day, and when I heard it, it was on radio. It was on air radio tuned in, and I couldn't understand half of the stuff they were talking about.
Yeah, Dave was telling us that you kind of grew up with hearing all about this Around the Horn.
Yeah, my father-in-law of 10 years loved it. He was from Ireland, and he was like first generation. And he just tuned into that and got a kick out of it. And I, even then, couldn't really understand it. It's so thick, the accents.
I didn't have too much trouble with Last Night's Show. Last Night's Show was pretty good.
No, it was kind of quite unique version of Cinderella, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weirdly ribald is what I got out of it. It was kind of like...
A little bit,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like... Maybe good for, you know, a taste test, but I couldn't get into a full diet of it. But that's me.
So do you know what movie or what you're doing on the Twitches there next Saturday, sir?
Actually, I think I've got Reptilicus in the can.
Ooh, Reptilicus, good stuff. The full-length version where the janitor guy does a little song and dance?
Yes. And then end, he comes out in a tutu and he does a small ballet, the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. I'd have a 3-3, you know, or 4-4, but oh well.
Yeah.
in lieu of a tutu, I guess. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, again, Merry Christmas to good old Bob, Fogsbane, CW, Joseph Gibson. Gosh, who else? I mean, there's so many. All over the place. Those of you that have been following us on Facebook or listening to us silently where we can't see you, we'll see you next week.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Guy with the boinger.
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
John, too hard to dig it.
There. For no particular reason. That was fun. Very, very, very nice holidays, but unfortunately. Dave, do you have to go to work tomorrow?
Actually, I'm taking this next week off, and I'm only giving a week back of vacation to the company.
Very good. No, I'm going in tomorrow, so that's lovely. Just lovely.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's our busiest week of the year, actually.
Oh, is it? Between Christmas and New Year's?
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
People have certain obligations. When you turn age 73, if you have an IRA, you got to take money out.
Ah, okay.
The tax thing. The government wants you to take it out so you get it to your income and they can tax you. So anyway,
again,
everybody waits till the last minute because they want to get all the interest they can all year. And then, so it's a madhouse. It'll be a madhouse.
And oddly, I just ran across this thing from Fisher Investments. The brochure that says three things you need to know before retiring with $500,000. I would say question number one, where do you get $500,000? You know, I'm like, what?
I've been
looking. I guess I'm not in that club.
Me either.
Thing I wanted to – in the story about the Dickens thing where he went awry and all that, he gave away 300,000 pounds, but let's just say it was dollars. The furthest I can go back is to 1913, and $3,000 would equate in 2023 dollars as $93,000
in today's money.
Change.
Wow.
So he gave them $93,000.
Yeah, that's only
1923. And they wanted more. And I'm like, you greedy so-and-sos. You just that's
people
like becoming a millionaire back then. Huh?
Was that what he set aside for the kids?
No,
the
that was what he gave Bob Cratchit, and then he gave the other gave him 3,000 pounds. He gave the kids more in a trust fund or something.
But people get like that when someone dies. The other ones, it really bothers them, whatever the other one gets. I'm like, I'm just, you know what? If somebody leaves me money, I'm grateful they thought of me.
Hey,
thanks.
If you get a penny, you're a penny ahead, right?
Exactly. I expect nothing from anyone for stuff like that.
I've actually, and maybe this is a bad thing, I've gotten some inheritances in my life, and I gave them away. To help someone. Maybe, I don't know. You know, it was like, could I have done something with it? Yeah, but someone else needed it more. So, you know.
Okay. Good man.
Now,
if I could do one thing, I wish I could find a young person who's as passionate as like the three of us guys are about old things, be it old movies, old television, old radio. Because my kids, God bless them, they like cool things and stuff, but not kind of like the cool things I do. And I would just like to see somebody who absolutely cherishes this stuff get it when I croak.
Well,
or be buried with it, one of the two. So.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a bigger hole than you imagined if you get buried with it.
Yeah, that's true. I got a lot of books. Jesus Christ.
There are plenty of... There are plenty of groups out there on the social media, Facebook stuff, of people of all ages that enjoy what you're enjoying and revel in what you're talking about.
For sure.
Any of them.
For sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you, Dave, when I retire, I will not be bored. I will not be bored. I have so many books I want to read, movies to start hosting again. And and maybe improving on what we do here, as well as maybe finding a new venue to stream television again. I kind of miss that. Streaming
it's
the TV stuff. It is programming everything.
I did have a problem. I had a problem last week where I was streaming and I was communicating with people, but I couldn't see the website that I was streaming on. Twitch was down or something, and I couldn't read the comments. And part of a live event is being able to bounce off the comments.
That's weird, because I could see everything. I'm surprised you couldn't get reconnected back again.
Well, I'm on Wi-Fi now instead of a cable connection.
The computer I'm doing off of is Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I don't have enough signal, but I should. I should have enough signal to operate internet. Upload is different than download. So if I'm on one computer uploading and I'm on another computer downloading the website to see the content, I don't know. I was having problems. It was interesting for the Christmas show, but it worked. It came off. I was able to run everything. It actually ran long. The show ended past midnight last Saturday. I was like,
Yeah, I did.
I was like, and I got out of there quick. I was like, okay, see you later. I hadn't intended it to be as long, but it was. There's a lot of crazy stuff about Charles Dickens. Like, his family got thrown into a debtor's prison. The whole family. The father went awry, and he had to take the entire family with him, the debtor's prison. And then Charles Dickens ended up having to work in a label shop where he was pasting labels on bottles as a kid. So he knew all about poverty, and oddly, like I was just talking about an inheritance, someone in their family passed away, inheritance came to the father, and he was able to get out of debtor's prison. But he never learned his lesson. So Charles Dickens starts making his way in life and printing stuff and getting kind of, doing kind of well. Dickens had a brother and his father. They were going out all over town taking loans out and then defaulting on the loans. And Charles Dickens had to take out an advertisement in the paper that said, "Don't lend these people money in my name." True story. That's
Yikes.
Crazy. He and Twain both ended up chasing dollars until the end of their days, going around reading their books in person. You could get Dickens or Mark Twain would go out to a locale, be paid for it, to read their own work.
Well, that was something that was the circuit. That was the circuit back then. Ambrose Bierce did that. And I mean, that was an easy way for them to make money.
It was, but both Twain and Dickens were chasing money because of financial downturns. It's crazy, but most of the time you think of Dickens being very austere, and you see his portraits and stuff like that. It's like, look like a man of well-to-do. Same with Mark Twain, but nope, they were chasing a dollar until they fell over. Which I'm glad I'm not. Chasing a dollar until I fall over.
Yeah, don't do that.
Hopefully at some point in time we start making decisions that help us, not hinder us. And the last concern a person should have would be your financial welfare. It's good to have two nickels to rub together, you know?
Yes.
That's right. Then you got money for the jukebox.
That's right. Woohoo!
another dime in the jukebox.
And I got to tell both of you guys actually helped to create and extend and make my Christmas by enjoying the small tokens I sent.
Very much so. It's hanging on our tree. It is hanging
Sometime by the end of the year. According to Blog Talk, which, of course, we have much, much more than this, but according to Blog Talk, 66,600 And right now, 35. So at some point, it'll be 66, 666.
Ooh.
What, hours of play or what?
No, listens. Listeners.
Oh, listeners. Oh, okay.
People listening and or downloading shows.
Yep. Ah, and we are a mere 46 shows away from 1,500 complete shows we've shared.
Good heavens. And we're just warming up.
You think we'd be hot night by now, but I guess not. Yeah.
I guess not.
I've been warm for a while. Maybe I'm standing too close to the fire.
Dave, you know the Browns have a better record than the Chiefs?
Do they? Did the Chiefs lose today?
They lost. They lost to the Raiders. Uh-huh. Yeah.
We're
still not clinched. I don't care how we're not clinched. We beat everybody in the South. And we're two games ahead of them. How can they catch us if we beat them head-to-head?
I think Thursday we'll finish that up. Thursday when we play the Jets, that's
the
wrap-up of it. That'll give us our 10th win. And that's
unless they beat
in.
Us. Unless we have our 10th win. We have our 10th win.
No, that was our 9th win. That was
no,
our 9th
win. We're 10-5. We're 10-5.
We're 10-5?
We're 10-5.
Is sports still impacted by COVID or not?
No.
Doesn't appear to be, no.
Doesn't appear to be. No, no masks.
What was it? A few years ago, it was closed down. All sports were closed, right?
For a minute.
Yeah, basketball kind of, professional basketball kind of all located in Orlando and did all their games there in a confined area. Football, baseball did everything without any fans in the stands the whole year. And football, by the time they got to September, they were allowing fans to be in there.
Yeah.
Not the full amount.
Right, but they were dead for a while.
Yeah.
Weren't they, wasn't it like all of these sports things, they were thinking about bankruptcy and all kinds of nasty financial downturns?
Not really. They're loaded with money. Are you kidding me? They're swimming in money. They're absolutely swimming in it.
Yep.
Those dirty so-and-sos.
Yeah.
How much money they're worried about. The New York Mets just got a $101 million luxury tax by overspending what the salary cap is. $101 million, which just goes to the league.
Yeah. They're rolling in it, Gar. There is so much money in sports, it's disgusting. Maybe, I don't know, education maybe? Nah, no. Don't do that.
Yeah, right. We don't want to educate our people. Let's make them do sports.
Let's have people dumb as rocks. I don't even want to get into it. A little math, you know, a little adding and subtracting there. Maybe.
Oh, my God.
That'd be good. A little bit of history, maybe.
Is it a Christmas conundrum, quote unquote. My family is gifting me a fridge for Christmas. The opening in my original 1950 kitchen is only 67 inches tall. Everything I find is 70 plus inches, even the vintage looking fridge. Has anyone else ever figured out this issue? Yes. Take out a cabinet. Have a good day. What the heck?
Hey,
take out a cabinet. What the heck? What's the problem?
I almost bought a vintage looking, it wasn't a vintage, but a vintage looking refrigerator for my garage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it was too much money. You know what? It was too small. I like having lots
small.
Of extra room in the garage for beverages and freezer space.
My dad was a beer maker. He made his own beer and he had a refrigerator in his garage. It was an older one. He didn't even care. It was like, as long as it was.
Yeah.
And he cut a hole in the front door and put a beer tap in there.
All right.
So you could just walk up to the refrigerator. Yeah, there you go. I don't
like
beer,
like
so
that
I
now,
never.
Too, I think it's called isn't it called a kegerator, Dave? You put the keg in there and
I think
it's cold and you just pump your beer right out of there.
Yeah, this was in the mid to late '80s, and he
they
made it
an
himself.
Ice cream device like that.
that'd be dangerous, too. That might be more dangerous than the beer cap. But
possibly. But fun.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, man. Dale, did you ever like the Spirit comic books by Will Eisner?
I have not read much, I will say.
Yeah.
I have not read much of the Spirit.
They're funny, and they are well drawn. It's just a nod to Eisner.
I have seen the art because, I've seen a bunch of them in Steranko's Histories of the Comics, which I believe I still have Steranko's History of the Comics. Very good. Good primer. Good thing to learn when you're getting into comic books, because it really gets into the early stuff and how things progressed over the years.
As an unofficial cartoonist, I have Eisner's books on how to draw, and they're a lot of fun. Yeah.
Good
stuff. A three-book set I got for myself. That's one thing about being alone and having the holidays. If I buy a gift, I know I'm going to like it. And if I wrap it with the delusions I've got, I'll forget what it is. And when I open it, I'll go, oh, this is amazing.
Does Gunner get stuff from Santa?
Sure I do. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And what's funny is
that
with
means
the
you've been good,
memory problems.
That means you've been
with
good.
The memory problems, it works out great. Me and Santa still have a good rapport.
There you go. Well, fellers,
I
probably ought to hit the road here.
Yeah. Dale, I wanted to toss this out. Remember when you got it, you were like, oh, I love this tin, right? And I was like, wow,
yes,
I like the tin.
I love those tins. I love all tins.
Yeah. I gave my director-producer friend and his wife one. She liked the tin, too, and I was like, really? Okay.
Yeah. No, they're cute. I love that kind of stuff. There you go.
I put it in the tin to protect the ornament, but you guys like both, so okay.
Yeah. Yep, it's a double gift.
A double
it
gift.
Is.
There you go.
It is. Double. All right, let's wheel out Mr. Durant.
Why not? We should do that. Come on out, Jimmy. It's the last
night. It's time to say
good night. Merry Christmas, Doctor. Merry Christmas, Dave. Merry Christmas, Bill. Merry Christmas, listeners in the archive.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
We've had a few laughs. And it's time for toodaloo. Glory bowl up we the same.
Merry Christmas.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
Oh my God.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever
you are.
Yes, crazy old woman.
Do you mind turning off the radio?